Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
Hello again and welcome back. I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. We come to you every day with a program that helps you learn American English. We speak at a slower speed and use words that are easy to understand. Today we have two stories for you. The first is about health care in Nigeria. Officials have recently found a way to get more people to see a doctor. Then we will hear how a terrorist group is using modern technology to spread its message. Two stories to listen to and then practice in order to improve your American English skills. If you're set, let's get started with part one. Researchers recently completed a study of a new method of giving health care to women in northern Nigeria. They found women and children would use health services more often when they could see a female health worker. Jill Robbins tells us more.
Northern Nigeria is a conservative area with a population that is mostly Muslim. Dr. Sally Finley is a professor at Columbia University Medical Center. She co-wrote the report on the study. She said, "It is unusual for women to work as healthcare providers there.
Most women are not expected to be living on their own, providing healthcare essentially 24/7, or riding around meeting with families in the scattered hamlets."
Nigeria has one of the world's highest death rates of women connected with pregnancy and childbirth. This is called the maternal death rate. The worst rate of maternal death in Nigeria is in the northern region. Male health workers do travel from town to town, but many women patients do not want to talk with a man about their own health care needs. Dr. Finley said the trial study in Jigawa State required that many in the community be involved. It also needed support from religious leaders, even on such matters as transportation for the workers.
We had to get permission from the state imam, the leader of all the Muslims in Jigawa, to have these female-friendly motorcycles and give permission for them to use them.
The program brought women into northern Nigeria as community health extension workers. It seems they were a big success in their community. There were 5 times more visits to the health center after the women health workers arrived than before. Dr. Findlay said the program changed the minds of the women taking part.
Yes, in fact, they did like this, and it did change their understanding of what they could get if they went to the facility for care.
The women of northern Nigeria could get health care at all hours in the local clinic. Mothers got help from women when they had normal births. If a mother giving birth needed more help, the community health extension workers sent her to a hospital. They also gave advice on family planning. Each clinic had 2 health workers. That way, one could go out on home visits, while the other was available to provide services in the clinic. State officials in Jigawa were happy with the positive results of the study. They plan to expand the program of women community health workers. The paper that describes the program by Sally Findley and her co-authors is published in the journal Global Health, Science and Practice. I'm Jill Robbins.
You are listening to The Voice of America, and we are coming to you from Washington. The writers of a new book about the Islamic State group say the terrorists are using technology developed by an American company to talk with one another and broadcast messages from clerics. VOA spoke with Hassan Hassan. He and Michael D. Weiss wrote ISIS Inside the Army of Terror. Mr. Hassan says the technology the group is using is an application or app called Zello. It is not widely known in the United States, even though the company that developed it 10 years ago is based in Austin, Texas. Christopher Jones Cruz tells us more about the terrorist group's use of technology.
The app combines social media with telephone and radio functions. Zello is designed for use in iPhones, iPads, Android devices, BlackBerry products, computers, and Windows mobile devices. It enables the user to talk with someone else who has the app. Zello does not need a lot of radio bandwidth and uses only a small amount of battery power. That means people in areas far from electrical power supplies can use it. It also can be used with traditional two-way radios. It can be used as a telephone or to send voice messages to large groups. Hassan Hassan says sermons from Islamic State clergymen are being sent on the app. He notes that children like using Zello, and these messages have influenced some of them to become supporters of the group. The book tells about a 14-year-old boy working in southern Turkey. In October 2014, he entered Syria to fight with Islamic State militants. His father later said his son had been influenced to join the group after listening to sermons on Zello channels. VOA found many Zello channels belong to supporters of the Islamic State, including one called the State of the Islamic Caliphate. It has more than 10,000 members. Almost 50 people help to operate the channel. Zello is also used in other parts of the world. It is similar to other push-to-talk cell phone apps like Voxer or iMessage. It operates in 22 languages, including Arabic. It enables users to share messages or save them for later playback. In some ways, Zello is like Twitter and other social media apps. It can help activists and protesters across the world communicate without the knowledge of their governments. It helped Venezuelans protest against their government last year. VOA's Ukrainian service reported last year that Zello has been popular among pro-Russia separatists in eastern Ukraine. Bill Moore is the chief executive officer of Zello. He told VOA he is not surprised to learn that the app is popular among protesters.
It's communication that works well, typically over poor networks. It's live. It's like two-way radio. It's ideal for organizing and communicating. And it's also anonymous, which is good and bad. It means that there's no identity that's been validated by Zello or anybody else, so users can have confidence that their conversations are private. And again, that could be used by drug dealers or people fighting for democracy.
Mr. Moore says when he learned the app was popular among Islamic State fighters, he thought, "It's terrible that Zello is used for evil. He told VOA that his company is working to reduce its use by people he called bad guys. He added that he wants Zello to be used only for what he called healthy conversations. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz.
And I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. You are listening to The Voice of America.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Economics Report. More than 40 countries, including Russia and Taiwan, have agreed to be founding members of China's proposed Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank. However, two of the world's largest economies, the United States and Japan, have held off at this time. China proposed the bank last October as a way to finance roads, bridges, ports, and other needed infrastructure projects in Asia. The time limit for joining as a founding member was March 31st. In only a few months, the number of countries seeking membership nearly doubled. They came from Africa, Europe, South America, Asia, and the Pacific. Some European powers added themselves to the list. They include Britain, Germany, France, and Italy. Other important economies include South Korea, Australia, and Russia. Taiwan also sought to become a founding member, but it is not clear how China will react. Taiwan and China do not have diplomatic ties. But relations have improved since the election of President Ma Ying-jeou in 2008. The two sides also are working on details of a trade agreement. However, popular opposition in Taiwan to mainland China's increased influence on the island remains very strong. The U.S. and Japan have said they are concerned about the governance of the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank, or AIIB. The United States has urged countries to consider details about the bank's governance and standards, its social and environmental policy, before joining. Critics say the AIIB threatens the work of existing development banks such as the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, and the Asian Development Bank. Yet the Asian Development Bank itself noted in a recent report that the need for infrastructure projects in Asia is great. The institution, led by the U.S. and Japan, estimated last May that the Asia-Pacific area needed $800 billion each year in infrastructure development. Experts are watching to see how China will take its leadership role in the new bank. The AIIB is expected to start with $100 billion in capital, mostly from China. Some experts point to the high interest in membership. Shi Yinhong is a political scientist at Renmin University in Beijing. He says China's leading part in the bank comes with benefits and costs. In other words, while China has gained from the effort to develop the AIIB, it will also have to satisfy other bank members and multinational institutions. Officials at the World Bank, International Monetary Fund, and Asian Development Bank say they are looking for ways to cooperate
with the AIIB. And that's the Economics Report from VOA Learning English. I'm Mario Ritter.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. This week in our series, Larry West and Morris Joyce continue the story of President Woodrow Wilson and American involvement in World War I.
'18 was the final year of the most terrible war the world had ever known. But World War I did not end quickly or easily. The German army made a final effort to defeat the Allies. The United States had entered the conflict, and Germany wanted a victory before large numbers of American troops could get to Europe. Germany's effort became easier after it signed a peace treaty with the new Bolshevik government in Russia. The treaty made it possible for Germany to use all its forces against the Allies on its western border. In the end, however, Germany's plan failed. Allied troops pushed back the German attack in a series of bloody battles. The addition of American soldiers greatly increased Allied strength.
The leader of American forces in Europe was General John J. Pershing. General Pershing used a weapon new to the world of war, air power. Airplanes were used first, simply as eyes in the sky. They discovered enemy positions so ground artillery could fire at them. Then they were used as fighter planes. They carried guns to shoot down other planes. Finally, planes were built big enough to carry bombs. General Pershing also used another new weapon of war, tanks. He put these inventions together for his battle plan against Germany.
Pershing's target was the Argonne Forest. It was a tree-covered area Germany had held since 1914. The forest was protected by barbed wire and by defensive positions built of steel and concrete. It was the strongest part of the German line. It also was the most important part. If Argonne fell, Germany's final lines of defense would fall. The fighting in the Argonne Forest was fierce. Thousands of men died. Sometimes troops got lost because the forest was so thick with trees. But day by day, the Allies pushed the Germans back.
Germany's leaders were losing hope. In September 1918, they met with German ruler Kaiser Wilhelm. The army chief reported that the war was lost. Germany had no choice, he said. It must give back all the territory it had seized and try to negotiate a peace agreement. Other officials told the Kaiser that the situation at home was bad, too. People were starving. Revolutionaries were plotting to overthrow the government. Kaiser Wilhelm agreed it might be best to seek peace now, before Germany was destroyed completely. He asked his foreign secretary to send a secret message to American President Woodrow Wilson. The message would propose immediate negotiations to end the war.
President Wilson received it. He did not tell the other Allied leaders. Instead, he returned a message to Germany. Wilson asked if Germany was willing to accept the peace proposals he had offered many months earlier. Germany's chancellor answered that his government did accept the proposals. However, the events of war ended the secret exchange of messages between Germany and the United States. German submarines had increased attacks on Allied shipping. 2 passenger ships were sunk. 820 persons were killed. Many were women and children. President Wilson was shocked. He told Germany there could be no peace negotiations with such an inhuman enemy.
In late October 1918, Wilson sent a final message to Germany. He wanted a settlement that would make it impossible for Germany to fight again. Germany, Wilson said, must promise to withdraw its forces from all Allied territory. It also must close its weapons factories. Wilson added that the Allies would negotiate only with a government that truly represented the people of Germany, not with military rulers. The new German chancellor was Maximilian, Prince of Baden. Prince Max received President Wilson's message. He succeeded in getting Kaiser Wilhelm to dismiss the man responsible for German military policy. But he failed to get the Kaiser himself to give up power.
Not all Allied leaders supported President Wilson's plan to end World War I. They could not agree on some parts of it. Britain, for example, opposed the part about freedom of the seas. Britain said it would prevent the kind of naval blockade which had been so effective against Germany. France and Italy opposed the part about creating a new international organization. Wilson had called it a League of Nations. To solve these differences, Wilson sent his closest advisor to Europe to meet with Allied leaders. The discussions were long and sometimes bitter. Many of the Allies thought Wilson was being too kind to the defeated enemy. But in the end, they all agreed to accept the plan as a starting point for peace talks.
By this time, in early November, the situation in Germany was growing worse. Communists and socialists were calling for a rebellion. The Navy was ordered to go to sea. Sailors refused and killed some officers. Reports told of rebellion in parts of the German army, too. The nation's leaders had no choice. They would negotiate a peace treaty. On the morning of November 8th, a German delegation went to Allied military headquarters to discuss terms.
The Germans were met by the Supreme Allied Commander, Marshal Ferdinand Foch of France. Foch greeted them coldly, and he did not offer peace terms until they officially asked for a ceasefire. Germany, not the Allies, had to put down its weapons first. The Germans were shocked when they heard the terms. The list was severe. Among other things, Germany must withdraw its forces from all occupied territories. It must give up Alsace-Lorraine, a part of France it had held for almost 50 years. It must give up most of its weapons, including airplanes, submarines, and battleships. And it must turn over large numbers of trucks, railroad engines, and other supplies.
The German delegation said it could not sign such an agreement. Germany, it said, was not surrendering. It was only asking for a ceasefire. The delegation said it could not accept the peace terms without communicating with the government in Berlin. But the German government was falling apart. Kaiser Wilhelm had finally resigned and left the country. A new cabinet had been formed, and a new prime minister had declared a German republic. Yet the situation remained unsettled. Because of this, the German delegation negotiating with the Allies had to decide for itself. After much argument, the men agreed to the Allied terms. They signed the peace treaty. A ceasefire began a few hours later.
News that the shooting had stopped set off wild celebrations throughout the world. People danced in the streets. They cheered the end of the worst war in history. There were celebrations along the battle lines, too. But these were quiet. Soldiers from both sides climbed out of long trenches dug in the ground. They met the men who, a short while earlier, had been their deadly enemy. The bloody European conflict was over. The dispute, however, was not. Another fierce battle was ready to begin. This time, the battle would be among diplomats. The fight over the peace treaty, officially ending World War I, was about to begin. That will be our story next week.
Our program was written by Frank Beardsley. The narrators were Larry West and Morris Joyce. You can find our series online with transcripts, MP3s, podcasts, and images at voaspecialenglish.com. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter at VOA Learning English. Join us again next week for The Making of a Nation, an American history series in VOA Special English.